that's what's unique about this series. No combustion engine car is allowed to go and race in the middle of these cities, and that's what Formula E can do.
We Drive the City, the official Mercedes-Benz EQ Formula E podcast. This is the very first episode of our new podcast, We Drive the City. Our team principal, Ian James, is always looking for new inspiration for our team. Today's guest is Gary Paffett, current development driver and advisor for the Mercedes-Benz EQ Formula E team. Ian and Gary talk about Formula E, their passion for motorsports, and Gary's very own farm. Enjoy.
So, Gary, we're here in HWA Race Lab. Good to see you again. And I thought we'd catch up today on some of your history, but also looking towards the future in terms of the role in Formula E as well. And before we start on that, just going really back to basics, how did you get into motorsport as a kid?
Thanks, Ian. I mean, motorsport's been in my family, I suppose. My father is a sort of motorsport fan, I suppose, and he was watching motorsport, traveling, you know, Europe, watching Formula One, and did a lot of racing himself at club level, raced everything. He did a bit of like saloon cars, rallying, gearbox carts, things like that, always kind of built his own machinery and went out and raced for fun. So he was, he's always been big into motorsport. And when I sort of got to the age that you could race, he just went out and bought me a kart. I remember the first time I drove something. It's strange. You don't remember much from your childhood. I forget a lot of stuff, but there's certain things that stick out. And I've got a picture of it as well. The first time I ever drove a kart was in a car park. My uncle worked at a sports group. He was kind of managed the grounds at a sports ground. And first time I drove a kart was in the car park at this sports ground. And I have the picture, you know, no helmet, you know, just driving this kart around a car park when I was 8 years old. And then, started racing when I was 9. And it went from there. You know, it just developed from there, I think. At the start, unlike some people, there wasn't any ambition at the start, really. You know, like I said, my dad did it for fun. And that was the whole point to start with, just to go and enjoy doing something. And it obviously built from there and got a lot better from that point onwards. But, through my whole childhood, it was just about going out and enjoying racing and having a good time.
So not to age you, but that was some 30 years ago when you started there. And from our previous conversations, I know that you've been professional for the past 16 years. Now, over that time, the majority of series that you've been in and obviously been with combustion engine powered vehicles, we're now in a new era of fully electric power. What are, for you, the key differences there?
For all of us, this is a new concept. Still, although Formula E is now in starting season 6, is still very young as a formula and as a way of propelling racing cars. And, you know, I'll openly say that at the very start, I was hesitant about the series. You know, I think everybody was when someone came up with this series of having, you know, fully electric powered racing cars, when the road car side of things was still very new as well. You had a few hybrids on the road, but most of them were taxis and stuff, and there was no performance in them. So thinking about a full electric racing series, for me, was something I wasn't sure about. But as the series has built, the interest from the manufacturers and from the drivers has changed massively, and it's now a top series. And for me, looking at the series, it's a lot of it's, you know, targeted at sustainability and things like that. But for us, for drivers, it's about performance still. It's a motorsport, you know, and we're there to race and we're there to drive high-performing cars. And the steps that Formula E has made in performance is incredible recently. And the cars now are a real challenge to drive. They're quick, and on the circuits we race on, they're incredibly challenging to race.
Mm. I mean, for me, I'm somebody that grew up as a huge motorsport fan and saw it from the spectator's perspective. And the things that I think back from my childhood, you know, that were particularly emotive are the sound and the smells as well. And you don't have that in electric racing. Is that something that you miss as well as a driver, or is that something that you've learned just to, there are other aspects which bring that emotion into it?
Yeah, I'm very much the same as you. You know, when I used to go to racetracks, go to watch Formula One on the occasions that I did, even going to testing or something, even when I was actually racing or testing myself, you'd get close to a circuit and you'd start to hear the sounds. You'd wind the windows down, and as you're getting close, you can hear the sound of these F1 cars or DTM cars around the track from, you know, a kilometer away, basically. And that was what sort of made you think, yeah, I'm here, I'm at a racetrack. With Formula E, until you're really close to them, you don't hear anything. So it is very different, and you do lose that side of things. You know, it is something that I think we miss, but Formula E is different. You know, that's the big thing about Formula E. It's not the same as any other racing series. It doesn't fit the mold of most of motorsport. It's done something different. As a driver, when you're out there, I think you do miss the feedback of the sound as well, you know, because as a driver in a racing car, when you're driving, you're using so many senses around how to know what the car's doing. And the engine note is something that you hear and that you use as feedback about what the car's doing. So you do miss that. You kind of have to adjust, because the Formula E car does make a noise. It's a different noise, and you have to adjust your feelings around that. So yes, I would say it is something that I feel we miss in Formula E. But as I say, it just comes part and parcel of the whole project and everything else. And it's something that you adjust to. And I think, like you and like all the fans, it's something different. The great side of having a really loud combustion engine is just the sheer noise and the excitement around that. But you try and talk to someone next to you in a grandstand watching a race, and it's impossible. You know, you have to, you wait. Even in the pit lane, when you're trying to talk to someone about something, you have to wait for every car to go past, and you get 5 seconds and then they arrive again. And I think for the fans as well, there's something different. You know, you can have a conversation beside the track at Formula E about something, and that's nice. You know, it's more pleasant with the younger kids, things like that. Every time I took my kids, you know, you have to make sure they got earplugs and ear defenders and everything else. And with Formula E, you don't have to do that. You know, it's probably much more of a social and family orientated thing. So yeah, there is something from the traditional motorsport that's missing, but there's a lot of positives around it as well.
I suppose it's that way that Formula E is kind of trying to reinvent itself, and rather than just go into competition with more classic forms of motorsport, is beating its own drum, if you like, and forging its own path in motorsport. And I remember my first Formula E event was in Berlin during season 4, and they had the Emotion Club actually built over the track. And that's something that you could never do with traditional combustion engine sport, just because of the noise and the fumes and so on and so forth. So that was quite, I suppose, a unique way of taking the differences that Formula E's got and actually turning them around to the advantage. You mentioned there about the way that you've had to adapt as a driver as well, because some of those things that you're typically used to, those sensory triggers, aren't there anymore. Is that something, therefore, that you need to spend more time in the simulator developing and understanding those nuances of a Formula E car?
Yeah, it is. I think the part of the lack of sound is something that you kind of never get back. So it's a sense you lose. So you have to try and find some other way of realizing what the car is doing. And that's mainly on when you're braking. You know, with a combustion engine, you can hear the engine note change. And effectively, when you hit the brakes and the engine note stops, you know you're in trouble, because the rear wheels aren't moving anymore. So that's always a bad sign. And the same on exit the corner, on acceleration, on traction, you hear the engine note change. So you can actually know what the rear tires are doing, know what the traction is like, just by listening to the engine note and nothing else. With Formula E, that's slightly more difficult to hear. So you need to adjust your kind of feelings around that. But the other thing with the Formula E car is that it's a very different way of driving it. And for any driver like me that's done so many years with a type of car, you know, whether it's you come from karting or Formula 3, you know, Formula 1, DTM, GTs, they're quite similar, actually. The way you drive the car is quite similar. And I can jump from any car into another car, go straight out, and you're pretty close to the pace. You're doing the right thing straight away. You get into a Formula E car and you do your first run, and it all seems very difficult. And you come in and the engineer's like, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. You need to do this, need to do this. And the way you actually drive the car, the way you get most of the performance out of a Formula E car is quite different, especially around the braking. You know, there's a lot of systems that control the braking, because most of the braking, all of the braking pretty much on the rear is done by recovering energy into the battery from the motor. So the rear brakes don't get used that much. So from that side of things, you have to learn how to drive and how to make most of the systems that are involved in the car, which is something which is quite different to a normal or internal combustion engine driven racing car. So that's from that side of things, that's how you have to learn how to drive a Formula E car. And that's probably the biggest difference that I've found between between what I've driven for a long time and what we're now driving.
Is it difficult? Because you're still racing in other series at the moment as well. And with your role as, I suppose, as development driver and also reserve driver for Formula E, you're in and out of the simulator here. Is that something that you find easier now to sort of switch between the two, or does it still take a bit of time to adjust?
It's getting easier. And I think the more you do it, the easier it gets. You know, I had, over my time in DTM, I did, 15 years in DTM. Over that time, I did 8 years with McLaren doing Formula One testing and simulator work, and then 2 years at Williams. So I did 10 years of Formula One testing alongside doing a DTM program. So I was very used to jumping from one car to the next and trying to adapt myself. And it became natural at the end to know sort of switch between the two. The switch between Formula E and the GT is probably bigger than I'd had before, between a DTM and a Formula One. But yeah, you adjust. You know, once you get used to how to drive this car and then how to drive this one, you have to then be able to switch between. Because when you go testing or racing in a GT car, you have to be on the pace straight away. And the same with Formula E. You can't spend half a day getting used to how to drive the car again. You need to be on it from the first run. So you have to be able to make that switch very quickly. And it's something I've learned to do, and I'm a lot quicker at doing it after doing so many years in different cars. But certainly the switch between Formula E and the GT is probably the biggest I've had. And so it's something I've had to work hard on, yeah.
Okay, good. And we've just mentioned that you've got your role at the moment as development and reserve driver, but it goes beyond that, because you've also been taken on as sporting and technical advisor to the team, and you'll be present at the races in that capacity. What is it that you'll be bringing to the team in that role?
It's a role I've kind of been doing for a few years in DTM as well. You know, I was actually dubbed as the team captain of the driver team in DTM for the last probably four seasons I did there, and that was a strange role again that no one had had before.
Was that ever official, or was that something that just kind of happened?
It was, it just kind of happened, really. You know, over the years, I think that, you know, I feel like I've always been a very likable person. I get on with the other drivers very well and things like this, and try not to cause too many problems between the driver teams. So I gain a lot of trust from the other drivers in the teams.
Do you think if I ask the other drivers, they'd say the same thing?
Some of them would. There's a couple.
Don't need to name names.
Don't need to mention names. I'd like to. But no, there's a couple over the years that might not agree so much. But most of them, I would say, you know, I had, especially the younger guys I've had coming through DTM with me, we get on really well, and I have a way of, you know, seeming like I'm not that competitive, but still being very competitive. So, you know, sort of being there and having someone they can rely on and know I'm not going to lie to them and stuff, but still go out and beat them. So, yeah, and I kind of fell into that role a bit within DTM and, you know, kind of was officially announced as team captain at one point, which everybody went, what does that mean? And it's like, well, I don't really know. But yeah, the formal role for me being an advisor is just trying to make sure that the drivers and the engineers are kind of talking the same language and stuff, which doesn't always happen. And the engineer, especially in Formula E, the engineers are very educated and they know exactly what they're doing when it comes to numbers and computers. When they have to talk to drivers, sometimes the translation is difficult. And for me, it's just a case of making sure the whole team is going in the right direction and we're doing the right things and we're not making any mistakes. And especially, you know, when the races are live and the drivers are at capacity driving the car, I can advise the team on what, you know, what the drivers need and what they want at certain times and things like that. So it's a role that there's a lot going on, a lot to do, and we'll see as the season goes on how it develops, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Very good. So, and Formula E itself, there's a lot of talk at the moment about sustainability, and sustainability can mean a lot of different things. What do you think are the key elements that need to be focused on for Formula E?
I think the thing Formula E has done really well is separated itself from the crowd. You know, as you said earlier on, when Formula E came out initially, there was direct comparisons to other formulas straight away. And that was completely wrong. You know, they were saying, well, they're not as quick as Formula One cars. They're not doing this. They're not doing that, you know. But you have to forget about all other motorsports and take Formula E on its own, because it's unique. It's the only formula that does what it does. It's the only formula where you can go and race in the middle of the cities, really in the middle of the cities. You know, there are some street circuits. I mean, Formula One races at Monaco, at Baku, Singapore, some street circuits, but they don't go to the center of Paris and race there, which is the most incredible thing, you know. And that's what's unique about the series. You know, no other car, no combustion engine car is allowed to go and race in the middle of these cities. And that's what Formula E can do. The performance level of Formula E has just increased massively for season 5. And, you know, the thrill of driving these cars around these cities is the big draw for the drivers and the teams, because it's something that no one else can do. And I think for Formula E, we made a massive step between season 4 and season 5, being able to go down to one car. You know, I always thought that the pit stop to change cars halfway through the race was quite negative for the formula, because it showed the cars only last 20 minutes and people are trying to sell road cars to people and they last 20 minutes. That was never good. So that was the big step in season 5, was to go to one car, to be able to have a car that the battery lasts for the whole race. And we're getting even further with that. The efficiency of the cars now is getting so good that you can, you're racing properly for 45 minutes basically now. So that's what we need to try and keep developing in the formula, is just being able to make the cars, you know, last longer and be able to use more power for longer, things like that, and keep developing the technology. I think that's what motorsport does well. They've always done it in Formula One, in DTM with the combustion engines, is accelerate the technology, accelerate the development that they can then transfer over to road cars. And that's what Formula E is also doing. The acceleration, when you get such competitive, you know, nature within a formula, the engineers work hard, people are developing road cars and stuff, they work hard to develop stuff, but when it's competitive, when it's in motorsport, the rate of development is increased so much that sort of technology that transfers over to road cars will be a lot quicker. And that's what they're doing really well at the moment.
It feels to me at the moment, because of the way that, as you've just mentioned, battery technology is improving all the time. And there's going to be a two-way street, if you like, for that technology transfer. So it's going to be something that will go from the racetrack towards the road cars. But I think also vice versa, you'll see road car technology coming towards the racing track as well. And hopefully as we go towards from generation 2 to generation 3, we'll see some step changes there as well, which will be interesting to see. But moving back onto the sustainability side of things, since you've been involved in Formula E, is there anything that's changed for you personally in your approach to that?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, before, once I've been involved in Formula E, you kind of get drawn into the whole sustainability nature and culture and things like that. So there is, you're so much more conscious of it, I feel. I'm not saying that I was really bad, maybe I was really bad to start with, but you're a lot more conscious about the sustainability now. And it's certainly, you know, personally at home or just in general life, trying to be more conscious of it and trying to be more, you know, trying to look after the environment a bit more, things like this. I mean, yeah, my road car is still probably not the most efficient thing out there, but we're working on that, aren't we?
We can change that.
Yeah, we'll do a change in that, exactly. So
next year, being EQC.
So. Exactly. And I think we went to Oslo to do the event with the EQC, and the road car side of things is great as well. You know, the EQC is an incredible car, and it really shows the development of the technology on the road car side of things as well.
Mm. And did Formula E play any role in influencing the fact that you're now sort of a gentleman farmer at home with a small menagerie?
Yeah, exactly. Trying to home source everything. Although we won't be eating the alpacas that I've got arriving.
No,
exactly. In winter, so no, we won't be eating them. And they don't do much for, I don't know, they eat grass. That's about it. But we've always had animals and chickens and things like that. So yeah, I mean, having chickens is great because the eggs come straight. There's no packaging, things like that, you know. So
you're doing your bit.
I'm doing my bit. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to do my bit. Yeah,
excellent. And home life for you? You've got three sons.
Yep.
At home, and any of them showing interest at the moment in following your footsteps?
Yeah, they have since they were very young. Yeah, and I've tried to point them in a different direction. So no, I think, you know, they have such a different life to what I have. You know, they're very lucky to be involved in so much sport. The one thing that they absolutely get from me is an ultra competitive streak, which goes from sports to computer games to board games to absolutely everything. It's honestly, it can be carnage in my house because everybody wants to beat everyone else at everything, apart from my wife, Lisa, who Besser is the one stuck in the middle trying to calm everybody down when they're shouting about stuff. But it's, my kids have an interest in motorsport. You know, they do have an interest in motorsport. They've been at races, following me around races around the world, watching me race, and they love the sport. You know, the funny thing was that I won my first DTM championship in 2005. And my eldest son, Harvey, was 1.5 years old at the time. So he doesn't know anything about that. And in DTM, the kind of the performance goes up and down with manufacturers. And since all of my kids have been old enough to really know what's going on, I haven't really been winning much. So they'd heard stories about their dad that was this DTM champion, and they're thinking, they believe it to a point, but it's probably like the whole Father Christmas thing. You know, they tell me it's true, but you know, I don't see it myself. And then for my last year in DTM in 2018, we went and had an incredible season and won the championship. And for me, that was great because they were all there, they're all involved, and they saw it themselves. And it's great, you know, not that they don't believe me, but it's great for them to be involved in that. And I think as young sportsmen themselves, you know, they all love sport and they're very good at sports, lots of different sports. And for them to, I think, to see their dad go and really achieve something great and things like that, it's fantastic. And it really, I do feel like I am, you know, a really good inspiration for them because, you know, they all want to be sporty. They all want to do great things in sport. And the big thing with them is just making them realize, you know, how difficult it is to be a top sportsman because it doesn't come easy, that's for sure.
Of course, you're not just a mentor to your three sons. You've got both Stoffel and Nick now. So Stoffel van Dorn and Nick de Vries as the Mercedes-Benz EQ Formula E drivers. How will you, in your role, help them to get the best out of the package and as the team as a whole and get as far forward on the grid as possible?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a pretty good relationship already with both of them. Nick was a very young driver coming through the ranks when I was at McLaren, and he was with McLaren at the time. So I met him there and I've met him on and off throughout the years. And Stoffel, me and Stoffel bonded really well last year with the first year in Formula E for both of us, with HWA being a new team as well. You know, there was a lot of work together to try and develop the team, and we really bonded really well. So I've got a good relationship with both drivers. And I think what's important is that they both have a lot of respect for me, for what I've done and for what I can do. So having the respect and the trust from the race drivers, knowing that anything that I'm doing is going the right direction and everything else, you know, I can take some of the load off of them. And, you know, through the winter, as we are now, developing the systems, developing, you know, the steering wheel, the function of the steering wheel, things like this, you know, they know that I can just go ahead and do things and it's going to be right. And the same thing is at the track, you know, anything that, any advice that they need, things like this, they're not too proud to ask. And I think that's important, is to have that level of trust between me and the drivers and me or the engineers, that you have that level of trust that, you know, basically anything that they need to know, they can ask, and they know that I will have an answer and have a question for them. You know, it's for me, it was great to have had the year in Formula E I had last year with HWA, because I really understand how it is to drive these cars, how it is to race these cars. And that was that's very important for me to be able to go into this role actually knowing what it is like to be in the position that they're in.
The time that they're actually spent, or is spent driving the cars, is, as you mentioned before, 45 minutes for the race plus one lap. Prior to that, you've got the qualifying. Prior to that, you've got FP1 and FP2. It's not a huge amount of time actually in the car, yet there seems to be, with all the drivers, a lot of emphasis put on physical fitness. And how important is that in Formula E compared with some of the other series that you've raced in?
Yeah, each formula has its own challenges. You know, for instance, in closed top cars like a DTM or the GT car, generally the temperature's hotter, and that's what the difficulty is in that car, is the temperature. Formula E has its own challenges. I think the compressed nature of the program makes it tough because you get very short breaks between the programs, between the practice, qualifying and race, and it's been able to be sort of focused for that whole time, because it's quite easy to get to the race and actually be quite tired at the start of the race, having got up really early, done your two practice sessions, done the qualifying, and then you're into a race and you've already done, you know, probably six hours of driving and working with the engineers before you start the race. So that can be quite draining, and it's important to stay focused. And the toughest physical things with a Formula E car are probably something like the steering is quite heavy in these cars. You know, obviously with the you know, we don't have power steering in the cars, so they can be quite challenging to drive. The bumpiness of the circuit actually makes a big difference, you know, and because we're racing on street circuits, they can be very bumpy in places. And when you're driving a car over bumps in corners, there's a lot of movement with the steering, things like this, and this can sort of, you know, tire you quite a lot during the races. I think one of the big challenges with the biggest challenges with Formula E is adapting to the different kind of driving modes, the different power modes. You know, you have so many different power modes throughout a race day. You have your normal 200 kilowatts, which is your race power, and you'll be doing, you know, race laps where you effectively save some energy. You're doing some energy saving in the race as well as pushing, and then you've got the 250 kilowatt qualifying mode, which is. Is probably quick, you know, for qualifying on the circuits we race on. And then in between, you've got your attack mode power of 235 kilowatts that you get to use during the race. The difficulty is throughout the practice sessions, we're practicing all of these different modes to try and work out our energy saving for the drivers, for qualifying, to work out your braking points at 250, things like this. So I think that Formula E is probably not as physical as some formulas to drive for the guys, but mentally it's very tough. It's very draining, and there's a lot going on that you have to understand. And that's what is probably the most difficult thing about Formula E, is it's mentally very draining trying to understand everything.
And is there a particular circuit, a particular event from last year where you said that was the toughest, either physically or mentally?
I think, yeah, for me, both Santiago was the toughest in both cases. You know, for us as a team, it was only our second event, and we had a few problems in the race, shall we say, a few system problems. And at one point, there was a lot going on for me and the engineers, and to have to adapt and to have to try and fix things on the fly was proving quite difficult. On the other side of things, it was unseasonably hot. I mean, I think race day, it was 39 degrees.
And we had a 62 degree track temperature, yeah, if I remember correctly,
exactly.
Something crazy.
It was insane, you know, and we've been to hot places before in other formulas, but 39 degrees was the hottest it's been anywhere I've been. And I remember standing on the grid, and my feet were burning just from standing on the grid. I mean, your race boots, there's a couple of millimeters of rubber, you know, there's nothing. And you're standing on the grid and your feet are burning and you think, this is really hot. And you get the suit on, you get the helmet on, and before you're getting in the car, you feel the sweat kind of dripping down your body, thinking, this is going to be tough, you know. And it was a physically tough race. And on the other side, because of the conditions, It was incredibly mentally tough as well. You know, because of the heat, the track started to break up there. The tarmac started to break up a bit as well. So then you've got one single line, and if you make a slight error, you know, you're going to be in the wall. I think like Stoffel had last year. So it's
had to mention that, didn't you?
Yeah,
well, you'll get payback for that.
Exactly. I got to get things in when I can. Yeah. That was probably the race that was the toughest, both sort of physically and mentally, I would say. Just because of the conditions that we had out there and the situation during the race. So
we were very fortunate to be able to go around the world, and we're visiting in season 6, 12 different cities around the world for a total of 14 races. Is there anywhere in particular that you're really looking forward to?
A lot of them, you know. I think that the great thing about Formula E is that we get to see so many different cities, and for the drivers, every circuit is so different. Most formulas that race on regular racetracks, the tracks are different. Okay, the tracks are different, but they're still all racetracks. They're still all quite similar, you know. When you go to, you know, the Formula E circuits, you go to Saudi for the first race, and you're driving on very smooth, race-like tarmac, basically. There's a few bumpy areas, but it's racetrack-like tarmac. It's very dusty, yeah. It's obviously a part that isn't used very much, and it's in the desert, so it's very dusty, and the track evolution is incredible. You know, the grip level when you arrive there is shocking, really. So you're trying to adapt to that. And then, you know, you go to places like I mentioned, like Paris, which is really in the middle of the city, and you're driving on four, five different types of tarmac through one lap. That's incredible, and you know, just every circuit is so different, which makes it so exciting. You know, for me, I think that going to the new places is going to be fun. Going to Seoul, going to Jakarta is going to be great. I'm looking forward to going to them places. Although, you know, some of the venues that we're going to go back to, New York is going to be great. And obviously the finale in London. I mean, I unfortunately, we didn't have a race in England, in London last year. So going back to London, racing around the XL, having a quite large indoor section is going to be new, is going to be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, the only thing I've done similar, I did the Bercy kart race, which was partly in a stadium as well. And racing inside is really bizarre in a race car or kart. So that's going to be really fun.
So especially with the inclement weather that can come into the UK and London, it could be a sort of a half wet, half dry race as well. So it could make for some interesting action, I'd have thought.
Exactly. But that also is the beauty of Formula E. You can do that. You know, the tyres we have from Michelin are fantastic. You know, they look like road tyres, but they're certainly not road tyres. They're a proper race tyre, but it's an all-weather race tyre. And you know, we've had races where it started to rain or it's dried out and there's no tire changes, things like this. You know, you just stay out there on the same tires. And as you say, if we have some rain in London, which in July is probably still possible, actually. Yeah, probably still possible. And if you had that going from inside to outside, a wet to dry track would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned before about being an inspiration to your kids. If you look back in throughout your career, what do you think were the most inspiring people or most inspiring moments that really drove you on to be as successful as you have been?
I mean, you know, having been involved, watching, been interested in motorsport from very young, it's mostly racing drivers. You know, when I was young, when I started, Ayrton Senna was the man I followed, the man I aspired to be. You know, he was just an incredible driver that unfortunately was taken from us far too young before he really got to fulfill his whole career. But then after him, you know, I think that what Michael Schumacher managed to do in his career was incredible. You know, he was a guy that could turn up at a team and make that team work. And I think I see a lot of what he can do in myself, that I'm very much a team player. You know, there are other drivers out there that maybe at times could get in the car and drive quicker than me, but to actually get the team to work, to get the car working to a point where we could go and win, is something that I've kind of been able to do over the years, and that's something that Michael Schumacher managed to do. He built a team around him, built an incredible team, and no doubt without him there, they wouldn't have gone and won as many world championships as they did with him. So he's certainly someone that, you know, that him and Ayrton Senna were two people really that I look to and found sort of inspiration in trying to emulate what they've been able to do. Over the years, I mean, you see, I follow a lot of sports. I watch a lot of sports as well. And there are a lot of people over the years that I've seen, I'm struggling to name them now. But, you know, you watch elite sportsmen. Someone who more recently has really, really impressed me is Roger Federer. I watch a lot of tennis. And what Roger Federer's been able to do in his career, at this point in his career, to come back and to win and to be world number one and things like this is amazing. And that's what an elite sportsman is, you know, that he's, you know, the exact example of an elite sportsman that can continue to last for a long time.
Mm. There's a lot of, with sport, especially with international sport and at the level at which we compete at the moment, the fact of the matter is that you need to travel around the world to do that. There's been a lot of criticism about that in the past because of the sustainability topics. Do you see that as a particular barrier to how things are going to progress in the future? Or do you think it's necessary in order to provide that entertainment and to communicate the message?
Yeah, I think motorsport has, especially Formula E, there's two sides of it. Obviously, it's about sustainability, but you also need to get the message out there. And the sport, you know, it's on the other side, it's still a competitive motorsport, and traveling the world and getting to different places is a big part of it. I think if you look at the way the Formula E transports everything, you know, it's done as efficiently and, you know, as sustainably as we can. You know, the way I'm amazed at how small the boxes are that the cars and all the equipment gets packed up into. You know, you look at some other motorsports and things like that, the size of the trucks and the amount of stuff they take to races. But you look at Formula E and look at how small everything's packed in to be shipped then to different races and different countries. They do it in a way which is as low impact as possible. And I think that's important. But also on the other side, I think it is really important to get this message out about what Formula E is doing to as many places as we can. So, yeah, okay, if we stayed in one country and just did 11 races on the same track, would probably be more better for the environment. But that's not really what we're there for. You know, we're trying to get the message out to more places and more countries. And we're doing that as well as we can.
Okay. No, thank you for that.
So Ian, obviously ahead of your first year running a motorsport team at all, I think, obviously it's you know, a new project for you. We had certain expectations before the start of the season and a pretty incredible performance in Saudi, in Riyadh, for the first race. So what are you looking for now in 2020?
That's probably one of the questions which comes up in just about every interview. And you just mentioned there about having certain expectations before the season. I'd love to know what your expectations were at that point. I think for me, it was so difficult just to get a feel for A, where we stood, and B, therefore, what we could expect going into season six. The 2 days before the first race on Friday in Riyadh were probably a couple of the most stressful of my life, I'd think. Again, it's just that not knowing and the fear of the unknown. So it was doubly pleasing in that respect to come out of the starting gate in a fairly strong manner and to achieve the results that we did in Riyadh. Having said that, we're still very conscious of the fact that maybe we took or were able to take advantage of others' mistakes as opposed to having an out-and-out performance, which is really at the top. So there's a lot of work to still be done as we focus on the remainder of the season. Suffice to say, we've got a good, strong basis on which we can now build. So I think that with that in mind, there's a lot of work for the team, but they've got their heads down and they're going to be approaching it in the right fashion.
Yeah, exactly. I think the same. I think we, through the whole preparation process, there was highs and lows and some pretty low lows at points thinking, oh my God, this is not going to work. But, you know, I think, you know, one of them was before Valencia, before the test. It was tough, but we got there and we got all the work done, and it seems the same happened at Riyadh. You know, there was some not so good things going on just before, but we made less mistakes than others, which meant we scored a good amount of points. And I think that's the whole thing about Formula E, is that it's hard to know what to expect. It's such a competitive formula. You don't have the big gaps in performance like you do in other formulas, specifically Formula One, you know. So if you don't do a great job in qualifying, as we know, you're going to be last on the grid, you know. So it's this really competitive formula, which makes it so hard to have expectations, because you really don't know where you're going to be. And I think, you know, we started the season strongly, but it's going to be, again, so competitive going forward with so many good teams and drivers. It's still going to be a very tough season.
It certainly is. And I think that there's a long way to go, as we've just mentioned. A lot of the season is still to come, but it's going to be an incredibly exciting season for all of us involved. There's no doubt about it. And it's going to be an absolute privilege as well to be able to visit so many different locations and such iconic cities during the course of 2020. And very much as we've been doing here, which has been an absolute pleasure and a privilege to speak with you, we're going to be picking up with some other inspirational figures as the year goes on in those cities, talking really about what they do within their own locations and focusing on what we've termed as livable cities. But as a kickoff, to speak with you about racing and your career and the heart of what we do and what we're passionate about, which is motorsport at the end of the day, has been a great way to start. So thank you very much indeed for that, and looking forward to working with you for the rest of the season.
Yeah, me too, absolutely.
Cool. Thanks, Gary.
If you enjoyed what you have heard, hit like and subscribe to We Drive the City on your preferred podcast platform. For the upcoming episodes, Ian James will meet inspiring people from each EPRI host city. Stay tuned.